Good afternoon, and welcome to Live with Pastor Al. Got a Bible question? Wondering what to make of current events? Call now at 888-677-9673. That's 888-677-9673. Now open your Bibles, open your minds, and join in the conversation with your host, Pastor Al Davis.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to another edition of Live with Pastor Al. I'm your host, Pastor Al Davis. Be with you until 2 o'clock right here on AM 1220. The Word, I hope you'll be able to stick with us here this afternoon. We have got a special program planned here today, and I'll be introducing our guest here in just a moment. But just a reminder, check us out online at livewithpastoral.com. That's livewithpastoral.com. And while you're there, of course, you can find out more about me, more about the Richfield Bible Baptist Church, where I am the pastor, and I certainly want to invite you to come out and visit us. We have our service schedule be listed here at the end of the program, but I just want to remind you, we got our Friday night Bible study tonight, and boy, do we have a lot to talk about between the earthquake in New Jersey, the earthquake in Iran, the earthquake in Taiwan, the eclipse coming up, and quite a number of things happening, and of course, the threat to Israel with the, here we are on the last Friday of Ramadan, and it's Al-Quds Day in Iran, and they're threatening retaliation against Israel for the strike that took out one of their generals, and there's just so much going on today, and you can't possibly deal with everything in a short period of time, a short program like this, but we're going to go back and look at something that took place here just this just recently. The U.S. Supreme Court had oral hearings in a case dealing with the Food and Drug Administration versus the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine. And there were two doctors that were cited repeatedly by the justices during this hearing. And one of them was Dr. Ingrid Skop, who's going to be with us here on the radio this afternoon. She's the Vice President and Director of Medical Affairs for the Charlotte Loser Institute, and she's got more than 30 years' experience as a practicing obstetrician, gynecologist, and has written a number of articles, and I'll save some of that information for her to share with us here. But Dr. Skop, welcome to the program today.
Thanks. It's great to be with you, Pastor Al.
I'm so glad to have you on with us, and this is one of the areas that we have been trying to keep up with, and like I said, with a short period of time, you know, there's just so much happening around the world, but this is something that we don't want to lose sight of, because this affects women and children, especially unborn children, right here in our country. And Dr. Skop, if you could just give us maybe a little quick background on yourself, and then we can jump over to that case that you were mentioned in there at the U.S. Supreme Court last month.
Sure, thank you. So as you mentioned, I'm a practicing obstetrician, and like approximately 90% of obstetricians, I have never performed elective abortions. I am blessed to be able to care for a woman and her unborn child. And yet, over the years, I've recognized more and more how women had been harmed by abortion, both physically. The abortion industry tells us that complications are rare, but that's not true. They use misleading data to make that claim. But also emotionally and with mental health complications. So that's why I do the work that I do. In regarding this particular lawsuit, the abortion drug regimen that is approved by the FDA is two drugs. Mifepristone blocks progesterone, so it kills the unborn fetus, and then is followed about 24 hours later by misoprostol that induces contractions. It's a terrible experience for women. The average woman will bleed heavily for several weeks. Almost half describe the pain as severe because essentially they're going into labor, and many women will see their aborted child. It turns out that the process where the FDA approved and then loosened restrictions on these drugs was highly politicized. Essentially, they broke their own rules over and over and over again. And currently, with the COVID pandemic as an excuse, they removed all of the in-person supervision on these drugs. So they can be ordered online. They can be delivered in the mail, sometimes illegally, because there, of course, there are many states trying to protect unborn life. And women are not, no one's estimating their gestational age through exam or through ultrasound. No one's ruling out a potentially deadly ectopic pregnancy. No labs are being done. No one is looking a woman in the eye to see, does she really want an abortion, and does she know that there are other alternatives, including support if she wants to give birth to her child. So that's the basis of this lawsuit, is that the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine, as the name implies, pro-life doctors who don't want to end the life of one of their patients, we're being called over and over to emergency rooms to clean up after abortion providers have provided these dangerous drugs. Complications are frequent. One out of 20 women goes to an emergency room with a complication after these drugs. And last year, there were 630,000 of these abortions in our country. So you can imagine this is happening a lot. And we're merely asking that the FDA be required to follow its own rules. And these rules include making sure that drugs are safe before they're permitted on the market.
Well, and Dr. Scott, as you're talking about that, the question that came to my mind thinking about this, my wife's an RN, and she, of course, works more with the end of life rather than the beginning of life. She's a hospice nurse, and prior to that, long-term care. Nonetheless, you think about this and the idea that these women are getting this drug that has this obvious danger to them with no medical checkups and all of that. What is, I guess maybe that's the way I want to ask it, sort of a two-part. Are there age limits to how young these women can get this pill? And also, is there a time limit in the pregnancy, which I think I kind of know the answer here to this part, to how late in the pregnancy they can get this pill?
Well, the FDA has approved the drugs until 10 weeks gestation. But again, now that they're not requiring an ultrasound mm-hmm. or anybody to verify, they're relying on a woman to accurately report her gestational age. She may be wrong, or she may be so desperate that she's willing to lie to get the drug. And the further in a pregnancy a woman is, the less likely they are to work completely. Either the baby may continue to live, or all of the tissue is not expelled. And that's a very common reason for these complications. Women will bleed and have pain until that tissue is removed from their uterus. And so many times when they fail and present to the emergency rooms, they do require surgery. Regarding the age limit, this is one of the areas where the FDA broke the law. They are required by law, if a drug is used in a pediatric population, to study it specifically in that population. Because again, a 12-year-old adolescent, these are hormone blockers. How does that affect her? We don't know, because 24 years later, the FDA has never done those required studies. So there is no lower age limit. And you can imagine, now that they can be ordered online, an incestuous abuser could coerce a 12-year-old into an abortion. Mm-hmm. And the FDA apparently does not care about that.
You know, it's kind of interesting. Here in Ohio, we just passed what's called the SAFE Act, and one of the things it requires or mandates is that adolescents, teens, cannot be given puberty blockers, you know, in order to arrest their development. And you just mentioned that about with young people receiving this, about blocking the drugs. The thought occurred to me as you were saying that. I wonder if there might be some interesting interaction somebody would pursue with regards to that there. But and unfortunately, just with the short time that we have today, we think about this and the threat that it is. What's the basis of this court case that you were mentioned in at the Supreme Court that we need to know about so our people can pray better for this?
Well, the data is compelling, and if the Supreme Court looks at the data, there have been 39 amicus briefs filed that talk about how dangerous these drugs are, how poor quality the studies that the FDA relied upon are, and how better data shows very frequent complications. But really, the primary focus for prayer right now is that the Supreme Court will consider the case. Of course, it's gone in front of them, but during the argument, a lot of emphasis was placed on whether the doctors, the pro-life doctors like myself who are caring for these injured women, whether we have standing to sue. In fact, the government's attorney representing the FDA, Justice Alito, asked her, if these doctors don't have standing, who does have standing? And her reply was, no one has standing to sue the FDA. They are the experts, and they essentially, she was saying, they should be unaccountable to the American people. And I think regardless of how people feel about abortion, we should all be very troubled by that. Of course, our government bureaucracies should be accountable to the American people. And so my hope and prayer is that the Supreme Court will be brave enough to give us standing. We all know that they've really been beaten up over the issue of abortion. And, you know, potentially they might be looking for an easy out, but they really need to take this case. They really need to look at the data, and they really need to hold the FDA accountable for following its own rules and protecting American women and girls from these dangerous drugs.
Now, when we look at this, what's the next step? Because I know we had the oral hearings, and I know there's much more to the case than just the oral hearings. Does the court have anything scheduled for the future, or is it just going to be waiting until they process through the hearings and deliberate amongst themselves before we find out much more?
You know, my understanding is that actually they do kind of a straw poll after they hear a case. And so they may have already voted on whether they're going to grant a standing and what the result should be. But that can always change until the decision is released. It's anticipated to be released probably toward the end of June. So again, we should be praying that they will consider the case on its merits. And if they rule as the Fifth Circuit did, it doesn't take these drugs completely off the market, but what it does is it puts them back to their initial conditions of use prior to 2016, where it was an actual doctor that prescribed it, where complication reporting was mandatory, and as were in-person visits. I mean, all of those are common sense things. I mean, for a drug like this, and a decision as crucial as whether to have an abortion, of course that woman should be able to see a doctor and obtain informed consent and recognize, you know, what risks there are. So I think it's very reasonable what is being asked of the Supreme Court. So we will find out toward the end of June what they decide.
Well, certainly encourage our people to pray for that. Dr. Scott, if people want to find out more about this, is there a website that they can go to or someplace where they can find some information to be better informed?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for mentioning that. So the organization I work for, Charlotte Lozier, L-O-Z-I-E-R, institute.org, we have information, a lot of information specifically about abortion drugs, but also other areas related to abortion and related to maternal mortality. And so many of the things that we're hearing in our country today as excuses, as sort of reasons that they're trying to overturn abortion laws. And so we do, the American public need to educate themselves so that they understand this issue and they can discuss it with their friends and hopefully their pastors as well so that we can all engage in an educated way.
And, you know, you're talking about discussing it with their pastors. As a pastor myself, I marvel at the fact so many pastors are reluctant to discuss this issue or to teach on this issue in their churches. I mean, it couldn't be clearer. We're talking about protecting life. And, it's very clear from the scriptures that the unborn child is alive. In fact, I tell people that biologically, obviously, from the moment of fertilization, you have a unique human life. And biblically, according to the Bible, you have a unique human life. Psalm 139, where he says, I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. And it goes on to talk about a part that I like in particular, where he says in verse 16, thine eyes did see my substance, yet being unperfect, and in thy book all my members were written. Well, I actually happened to be a biology major before I ever went into the ministry. And as a biologist, I can tell you that that reflects reflects the biological fact that in the moment of conception, you have a book written that's the DNA that codes for everything that individual is going to be. And we need to be encouraging our people to pray for the vulnerable, to protect the vulnerable, the unborn children. And so that's why I appreciate what you're doing. As an obstetrician, of course, you see this all the time. What would you like to see happen here, the end result of this hearing?
Well, over the short term, of course, I'd like to see the safeguards put back in place so that women aren't having essentially totally medically unsupervised abortions. I mean, it's very, very traumatic for these women. But over the long term, I would like for this to generate a discussion in our country on merits of abortion. It ends, like as you said, a genetically distinct human life. The Bible does talk about God's regard for that child that he's created, lovingly crafted in the mother's uterus. And we need to be discussing the fact that more than 95% of abortions are for economic reasons, are for social reasons. And is that who we are as a country? Do we end human life for reasons such as that? Most women who've had a history of abortion say that they would have preferred to give birth if they'd only had support. So coming alongside these women, telling them that they're strong enough to do this, trying to heal the relationship so that the fathers stay involved. These are all things that we really need to be discussing and doing as a country. And again, the pastors need to be addressing this. They need the courage to talk about it as well.
Absolutely. And of course, at the Lozier Institute, you have a lot of good information for that. And before the program ends, we'll have to get that that website from you again. I was going to ask that one objection that's often made is, it's my body, my choice. How would you react to that?
Well, there's so many of these euphemisms are just absolutely incorrect. I mean, of course, that child is growing within his mother's body where it should be the safest place in the world for him to be. And yet, his body is not his mother's body. So, you know, this desire for individual autonomy has just gone awry in our country. But the thing about choice, we've gone from the narrative of choice to now most pro-abortion organizations do not want a woman to have a choice. They only want her to have an abortion. And we've seen this with the resistance to abortion pill reversal. We've seen this with the resistance to pregnancy resource centers that, again, want to walk alongside women. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done, but it needs to start with just people being educated on what's happening and how are women harmed by this. Of course, the child's harmed, but the mother is too. God created her to have children, and she bonds with that child. Even if she doesn't think she wants it, it can't help but damage her emotionally to end her own child's life.
You know, it's kind of interesting when you think about that, the idea how they want to be able to do what they want to do. And ultimately, I think in some cases, it becomes almost a selfish issue. I remember saying several times to a couple different groups I had opportunity to be speaking, and I would say, I was once a man trapped in a woman's body. And then I paused and say, and 9 months later, I was delivered. But the point being, you know, it's proof that I was not my mother's body because she did not possess a Y chromosome. You know, she had XX chromosome complement. I had XY. The Y came from my father. She had no Y chromosome to give. So it's very clear. I mean, I think, you know, they always talk about men should not say anything in regards to abortion. It's a women's issue. But any man can be able to say without any hesitation, that was not my mother's body when I was trapped in her, but when I was within my mother's womb, I was not her body. Obviously, clearly, I was a separate, distinct human being. And that's the point here. We have this desire to end the life of other human beings for whatever reason that they come up with. And I think that is a discussion that needs to be held.
Yeah, absolutely. And we need more men saying to women, we can do this together and let's have this baby. Because so many men have been told they have no voice. and they leave the woman feeling unsupported. So many women probably choose abortion when, in fact, if the man just said, hey, we can do this, you know, another outcome would happen. So that's tragic as well.
Absolutely. Thinking back to the hearings here recently, what was the atmosphere like? If you look at what was going on inside the court and they were talking about standing and all that, observations about what was going on outside of the court building with the people who were gathered?
Well, of course, this issue is so divisive that there tends to be people outside that are very emotionally charged on both sides of the issue. And of course, that did happen, and there were rallies on both sides. Within the courtroom, really was an atmosphere of respect, which mm-hmm. I was kind of surprised at, because our country, really, we've kind of lost a degree of respect of any institution, but there was respect for the Supreme Court. And there were some good things that happened. It was acknowledged by the federal government that they do want doctors to have conscious protection. And I think, you know, this government has actually been sort of implying the other way around, that they don't want doctors to be able to follow their conscience, but they, in fact, they acknowledged that that was the case. It was also acknowledged by the manufacturer of the drug, mifepristone, Danco, that they just are opposing reimposing the restrictions because they just want to make money. So that was kind of an interesting discussion. I mean, obviously, money is at the root of this, but so is eugenics, so is population control, and mm-hmm. again, so is it's a spiritual issue at its heart. But it was a very interesting discussion. But I think the big point that seemed to be hammered home is whether or not the doctors have standing. So I'm very hopeful that the Supreme Court will decide that we do have standing, that we can, you know, we've been harmed, and also that our patients have been harmed. And if we don't have standing to sue, who does?
Absolutely. And somebody, of course, again, has to stand up for the most innocent among us, the unborn children. I appreciate the work that you're doing there and the Lozier Institute is doing. I was thinking that, you know, this is really the biggest, if I'm not mistaken, this is the biggest abortion-related issue to face the court since the Dobbs decision overturned Roe v. Wade, isn't it?
It is. They did not look at a big court or a big case last year. There will be one more case coming before them later in April that regards EMTALA, which are laws that are trying to prevent doctors from refusing to see patients in the emergency room. But unfortunately, our current administration has tried to weaponize that law to force doctors to provide abortions in the emergency room, which is totally unnecessary, by the way. As an obstetrician delivering over 5,000 babies, I have never had to perform a direct abortion to save a woman's life. So, every state allows that intervention if it's needed, but it's hardly ever needed.
Well, there's certainly a lot of work to be done, and I know we're coming up faster than you realize usually to the end of the program, but we got a couple minutes left. And if you could give out that information on the Lozier Institute where people can go for more information, I'd appreciate that if you could, please.
Yes, thank you. It's LozierInstitute.org, LOZIER, Institute.org. And again, all sorts of information. Anything you want to know about abortion, our mission is science and statistics on life issues. And so we've got very, very high quality scientific information there. The science does support a pro-life position. So that's good to know and good to be able to share with your friends.
Well, and I would also say that while they're there, they should look up your information as well, because you've got a number of good articles that are available there to read. And I think your most recent one that's posted is A Chemical Abortion Explainer. Would you care to comment just to highlight a couple of articles that people might want to check out?
Well, I'm interested, and the other researchers are interested, really in every aspect of abortion. So we have a lot of statistics from individual states. We have a lot of information about complications that can occur both from the abortion drugs and from surgical abortions. Late abortions, a lot of people don't know that 1% of the abortions in our country, which is approximately 10,000 a year, are performed after the baby can survive separated from his mother, and that most of those are elective. So we're in really, really nefarious territory there, China, North Korea, Vietnam, right, and us. So people need to understand that we have very extreme laws, and that there's so much coercion. There's so many women who don't want abortion.
Yeah, I'll have to interrupt because we're out of time there. But Dr. Scott, thank you so much for being with us, and God bless in the work, and we'll be praying for you and the outcome. So thanks again.
You've been listening to Live with Pastor Al. To learn more about Pastor Al Davis and Live with Pastor Al, visit our website at livewithpastoral.com. That's livewithpastoral.com. You can also listen to past programs at livewithpastoral.com. Read articles on a variety of topics by Pastor Al at livewithpastoral.com. Pastor Al Davis invites you to join him at the Bible Baptist Church in Richfield, Ohio, Sunday morning at 11 or Sunday evening at 6. Or you can join us for our Friday night Bible study tonight from 7 to 9 p.m. The Bible Baptist Church meets at 4174 Wheatley Road, Suite 200 in Richfield every Sunday at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m., and then every Friday at 7. You can contact Pastor Al by writing Pastor Al Davis at Post Office Box 452, Richfield, Ohio 44286. Or you can email Pastor Al at pastoral@maplenoel.us. Join us for more live conversation this Sunday night from 10 to midnight. And again, next Friday afternoon from 1:30 to 2, right here on AM 1220, The Word. Late Night Live with Pastor Al is brought to you by the Bible Baptist Church in Richfield, Ohio.